Hi, fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow bookbinger, and you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. Today's story is written by an author who is already a favorite for many of you. Michael J. Sullivan is a New York Times, USA Today, and Washington Post best-selling author. Since 2008, he's released 21 novels with both traditional imprints like Del Rey and Orbit, and on his own as a pioneer in the indie publishing movement. And I'm thrilled to be able to feature one of his short stories. We had to hunt through several to find one that wasn't under contract, but I'm so happy this slightly older story of his has flown under the radar because now I get to read it for all of you. There's a bit of a mystery surrounding a girl being sacrificed by her village for the greater good. So I'll just let you listen to see what exactly happens to her. Please enjoy Traditions by Michael J. Sullivan. When the mayor called out her name, Annie Cross collapsed, the life knocked out of her. That's how it felt, because that's what happened. She was already dead. But reality needed a few more hours to make it official. She didn't remember falling, just found herself on the grass of the village common, sitting stupidly while everyone stared. She could have heard a raindrop land a mile away in the heartbeat that followed, and then came screams, shouts, and wailing cries. Annie wasn't the only thing that hit the ground. Her father's rake clattered to the cobblestone when four men tackled him. Alvin Cross was a strong man. Years of plowing, hoeing, and reaping had built shoulders of her daw like that of an ox. He shook off the first two with ease and crawled toward her. He got to within a few feet before Harold the Shepherd and Charles Lowbottom pinned him to the turf. "Not my Annie. Oh, God, not my little girl." In her 15 years, she'd never seen her father cry until that moment. The two locked eyes across the span of 10 feet while the men wrestled the ropes on him. It only took a minute. The men whose daughters had previously been called to volunteer were the ones to restrain. They always did their best to be humane, and often cried along with those they bound. Annie's mother screamed and wailed until the other mothers led her away. She was wearing her blue dress, the lucky one. The one she had insisted had saved Annie during the previous three callings. After hearing Annie's name, her mother ripped at it, nearly shredding the cloth before the women captured her hands. Her little sister Amy ran toward her, cheeks glistening.
"Let me go in her place. Take me. Take me."
Willard, who looked after the horses at Lawton's stables, caught her up in his arms. She kicked and beat her tiny fists against his chest. Might have bit him, too. But Willard held Amy close and carried her away. Before long, Edward the Sheriff's long shadow passed over her.
"Am I going to have trouble with you?"
Annie couldn't talk. No air remained in her body. She shook her head, and he helped her up. Men circled. She didn't know which ones, didn't look. She kept her eyes down and just sensed their approach. In previous years, other girls had run. Not many, but a few. Lucy Lowbottom had made it the farthest, sprinting all the way to the river before being caught. That was 3 years ago, the first year Annie was eligible. At the time, she had felt an incredible sense of relief, grateful to hear her best friend's name instead of her own. Annie had hated herself every day since then for that thought. After reaching her feet, she looked around. "It's okay to be relieved. she told the other girls still gathered on the green. Don't feel guilty. She might have said more, but didn't have the strength. The shock of hearing her name had been replaced by a growing numbness, a sense of unreal. They called my name. How can this not be a bad dream? The sheriff and his entourage escorted her to the night wait, the little prison made to look like a pretty house. Every family in the village had contributed something. Wood, paint, roofing, carvings, moldings. Their offerings made the miniature structure the most beautiful in the village. As a child, Annie had always wanted to go inside, to see what it was like. But neither her nor any other girl in the village had ever dared. As expected, the inside was as lovely as the exterior, with fanciful wallpaper and fine paneling. An enormous bed sporting a plush feather mattress and two giant pillows dominated one wall. The quilt was hand-stitched by the women of the village, each square cut from a dress from the girls who had gone before. Their names needle-pointed with a beautiful script by mothers, aunts, or sisters. As was tradition, the night wait was also filled with food. A feast of plenty awaited her because every mother had cooked their best dishes and delivered them to the little house. In all the years Annie had witnessed the calling, the food had never been touched. The next day, the feast was carried out and left untouched by all, save the forest creatures. Annie couldn't understand that until now. She had always told herself to eat every bite if she were ever picked. But standing amid the banquet, she had no appetite and barely summoned enough strength to breathe. Surprisingly little was said. What can they say? The mayor and the sheriff mutely watched her. Each appeared on the verge of tears. The mayor wiped his eyes as he locked the door, and they left her to spend the last night alone. In the morning, the elders would shackle her wrists, and together they would begin the long march up the mountain. For a long time, Annie stood in the center of the room, neither moving nor thinking, just standing. When her legs grew tired, she sat on the bed and was swallowed by its opulence. There was about as much chance of her sleeping that night as eating. Did any of them sleep? Staring at the floor, she couldn't imagine they did. Annie reached out and traced the scripted thread of Lucy's name on the quilt and wondered why she hadn't yet cried. The other girls had. Lucy had screamed and clawed as they forced her in the night wait. Everyone listened to her overturning tables, breaking pots, begging to be spared. By morning, Lucy was exhausted, pale, and broken. Annie imagined that everyone outside was wondering what she could be doing, given the lack of noise. A mouse scuttled across the floor. Normally terrified of them, she discovered she failed to flinch. Instead, she watched as the rodent climbed the table, appearing to know the path well. It dove into the bread pudding. Perhaps it looked forward to his feast every year. Enjoy, she whispered to the mouse, and meant it. She found herself filled with an overwhelming compassion toward all living souls. As little things caught her attention, they became sacred for the first time. The light of the setting sun, something she would never see again, was amazing, and she bid it farewell. The brass fitting of the door latch gleamed. Why haven't I ever noticed the beauty of such a marvel? Her simply styled white dress had intricate details, the finest workmanship her mother had ever produced. She missed her mother's embrace and the kisses that came at bedtime each night. Annie lay down, feeling at least the mattress hugging her. With eyes open, all she could see was the ceiling. How many girls have taken in this view? Dozens, certainly. Hundreds? Maybe. The calling had been around a long, long time. Annie's mother had taken her turns on the green. So had her grandmother and hers before. They all told stories on the nights before the callings, tales of friends and loved ones lost, and long-held remedies to ward against being picked. Her grandmother, Abby, had sworn by the luck of licking a toad's back. Her aunt Prima bathed in the swan pond at sunrise and fasted all day. Annie's mother just prayed to Maribor, prayed and wore her lucky blue dress. The sun set and night arrived. Darkness swallowed her, and the night wait. In the morning, they would call her a hero, and there would be a festival, of sorts. Never was there such a horrifying celebration as Offering Day. Friends would struggle to speak of her. Men would drink heavily, choking down toasts. Women would stitch her name into the quilt, trying not to soak the material with their tears. Even funerals were merrier. At funerals, no one suffered from guilt. Annie thought of her grandmother Mara, a feisty old broad and the only one in the village who could cow her father with no more than a raised finger and a harsh look. While dead for more than 2 years, Annie could still remember Mara's quavering voice the night before Annie's first calling. "If they say your name, Annie, my bird." Her grandmother had always called her that, for reasons unknown. "Know that your sacrifice will give your life a meaning beyond that of all others, save those who came before you. You will be a hero. Remember that, and it will give you courage." It didn't. She heard a noise, a rattle at the door. Perhaps the mouse had invited party guests. She sat up in time to see the latch lift and the door creep open. "Annie?" "Peter?" He was still in shadow, but she recognized his voice. "What are you doing here? How did you unlock the door?"
"I stole the key from my father's belt. I'm rescuing you."
Peter stepped closer, and the moonlight revealed a serious face and a huge knife in his belt. "You can't do that," she said. "You'll get into trouble. Serious trouble this time."
"I don't care about that. I won't let you die. Besides, I have a plan. I have bags of food and clothes down by the footbridge. We'll leave and never come back to this wretched place."
She didn't see his hand in the dark and jumped slightly when he touched her cheek.
"I'll marry you at the first church we come to. Then we'll travel so far from here that no one will ever find us."
His fingers slipped up her neck, combing into her hair. His other hand cupped her chin, and he pressed his lips against hers. He held the kiss, and she closed her eyes, wondering if this might be her last.
"Come, my love," he told her.
In the dark, he traced Annie's arm to her hand and pulled. "No." She hauled back.
"What?"
"I can't go with you."
"Of course you can. It's late. Everyone is asleep."
She shook her head, but realized he couldn't see her. "That's not what I mean. They called my name. I must stay."
"If you do, you'll die."
"I know, but..."
"But what? There's no but after that."
His face was just a black silhouette against the open door. She wished she could see his eyes, his lips. She imagined his forehead was furrowed with that little divot that developed whenever he got serious.
Do you want to die?
Of course not. But if I run away, what will happen to our families?
Who cares? They're content to let you die.
Oh, sure. Did you see how it took 4 men to convince my father of his agreement? And my mother? She destroyed her favorite dress. And what about...
Okay, I didn't mean your family. I meant everyone in this Maribor-cursed village.
I can't leave.
Why not?
Don't you see? If I run away, they'll just pick another. They'll have to.
Peter didn't reply immediately, but he didn't let go of her hand. She heard him take a deep breath and a step closer.
But it won't be you.
He pulled again, but she resisted.
Annie?
I'm staying.
But you can't. I love you. I thought you loved me.
I do, but I can't go. I don't even know how you could ask me to.
You don't know how... Annie, you're just not thinking clearly.
It's you who isn't thinking. How can I leave knowing someone else? Another girl who is relieved to be safe tonight. Will hear her name called because I was a coward. Is that the kind of person you want to marry? Someone who would force another to die in her place?
I don't care about the others. You're the one I love.
She twisted free of his grip and retreated a step.
Are you insane? Annie, if you stay, you'll die.
You go.
Not without you.
She didn't want to fight. Not that night of all times. But Peter could be so infuriatingly stubborn.
Well, I'm not going with you. So unless you plan to spend the night,
you're not making any sense. And I'm done talking.
Peter grabbed her around the waist and the back of her knees, picking her up.
No!
She shouted, pushing away from him.
Stop it! He growled. Don't make me hurt!
She raked her nails across his face. He gasped and let go. She fell on the floor, then kicked out. Catching his shin made him grunt.
Get away from me!
Shut up! They'll hear!
Annie got to her feet and shoved him backward out the door.
Good! Let them hear!
She shouted louder, then slammed the door between them. From the other side, she heard Peter's voice.
I thought you loved me.
He didn't sound angry. He just sounded hurt. Annie didn't answer. For the second time that day, her legs grew too weak to hold her up, and she slid to the floor. He waited. Then she heard his footsteps walking away. The tears finally came. She wept into her palms. When she wiped her eyes clear, she noticed a sliver of moonlight. The door she had slammed bounced against the frame, but hadn't caught. No one had heard. No one came to check on her. Opportunity beckoned. A part of Annie wanted to run out, chase down Peter and beg for his forgiveness. She wanted to put their lives in his hands and forget everything that came before. Except, if I run away, they'll just pick another. The moonlight inched across the floor and glinted off something shiny. In her scuffle with Peter, she had knocked the knife loose from his belt. A carving knife, almost the size of a cleaver, with a pointed end and a serrated blade, lay just a foot away. The handle had a worn grip of wood and a small crack. Annie looked back at the door.
Know that your sacrifice will give your life a meaning beyond that of all others, save those who came before you. You will be a hero.
She didn't feel heroic.
Annie felt like a victim. If her death would ensure that no other girls would need to die, then maybe. But every year there would be a new calling. A new girl to occupy the night wait. Another to ignore the solitary feast. "I'm not a hero," she said to the darkness. Then her eyes found the carving knife again. "But what if I were?" Annie got to her feet, picking up the knife as she stood and felt the worn wood grain. She slashed the air once, then again. The weight felt good, not too heavy, not too light. She ran her thumb sideways against the blade's edge, feeling the harsh scrape of the steel against her skin. The knife didn't feel lethal. It seemed insignificant and small. What she needed was a sword, something impressive, something big, something with killing power. Turning the little blade over in her hands, she sighed. It would have to do. From the banquet table, Annie grabbed a hand rag. She wrapped the knife, clutched the bundle to her chest, pulled the door open, and stepped out. The light of a full moon separated treetops from the sky, and the pale light hinted at objects. The rain barrel near the meeting house steps, the woodcutter's cart, the old well on the common with its bucket resting on the sill. Annie shivered. Her dress was thin linen and the night damp. She noticed the homes surrounding her and couldn't recall ever seeing them all dark. Annie was too young to be out so late, and yet not so young, too. She focused on the road that led out of the village. "It's not like I'll sleep tonight. Why wait?" The time spent in the night wait had been torturous. It had been better to haul her up the mountain the instant after the calling. The delay was supposed to be an act of kindness. Time for the family to accept the choice. After the night passed, there would be a moment at dawn when she would be allowed to kiss her parents and sister goodbye. Thinking about that brought tears and a crushing sadness. The elders had had good intentions, but Annie knew it would be a torment. Looking back at the night wait, she spotted the shackles hanging to the left of the door. "I'm not a victim. I'm a hero. And heroes don't just wait to die." She turned to the road and started walking. If Peter saw what she was doing, he'd think... No, she couldn't imagine what he'd conclude. Maybe that she was insane and certainly not thinking straight. "But I refuse to be a hapless victim." No girl had ever tried to do what she was about to, and no one in the village would ever forget. Everyone remembers Lucy for her foolhardy race. What will they think of this? Hers would certainly be the account told most often on the nights before the calling. Realizing this didn't help, hers would be a cautionary tale. At first, each step was tentative. Then, as she committed herself, Annie began to fear the opening of doors and lanterns being lit. Anything that could steal her chance. She began running up the road, her blonde hair and white linen dress fluttering in her wake. A pale ghost racing through moon-scattered shadows. By the time her lungs burned for air, she was out of sight of the village. When they found her missing, the sheriff and the elders would likely search the road south toward Ghent, or perhaps west as far as the lake, or even east toward Lingard and the valley, the way she imagined Peter wanted her to go. No one would look north toward the mountain. "I'm safe," she thought, then smiled at her own absurdity. Unlike the other roads, this one was rarely traveled, and remained overgrown with brambles and littered with moss-covered trunks, forcing her to scramble over them. A storm started to rise. A wind blew through the trees, swaying their heads in a violent dance. Battered leaves were torn free and flew through the air. Annie brushed hair from her face, and even in the dark, she found a path beneath her feet. She liked the feel of the cool dirt beneath her toes, the feathery brush of grass, and the way the wind played with her hair. Is this the last time I'll feel any of it? She hoped the coming storm wouldn't cloud the sky before she cleared the trees. Having already said goodbye to the sun, she wanted to see the stars one last time. There was so much to miss, so much to regret, so much she'd never done. She'd never traveled to Lanksteer for the Great Fair, never seen the new Empress, and her parents had promised a visit to Trent next summer. But the worst remorse centered on Peter. She'd never spent a night alone with him. Does he snore? They'd never have children together. Will he have them with someone else? She pushed the thoughts of a future aside, and memories flooded in to replace them. Making pies with her mother, swimming in the lake, lying in the sun with her sister while listening to the drone of bees. I'll never do any of it again. Despite her best attempts to cut off thoughts of Peter, she remembered their walks by the stream, his lopsided grin, and how it felt when he took her hand or held her. He would never understand why she had chosen her current path instead of running off with him. In many ways, he was still a boy. He only thought of her and of them. She could only focus on what she must do now. It must stop. The thought sounded so strong and hopeful, and yet she held no illusions of her prowess. She was not arrogant enough to think of herself as special or somehow destined by fate for victory. She wasn't a warrior, and Annie knew nothing of fighting. She was as distant from a great knight clad in armor with a magic broadsword and mirrored shield covered in enchanted runes as the moon was from the stars. Annie was a village girl, just 15, and all she had was a miserable kitchen knife. She didn't even have a plan, strategy, or a clever idea. She merely knew there was no choice except to try. The alternative was to give up all hope, and that was the one thing she did possess. Hope was the last bastion of the desperate. At last, she cleared the dark of the forest and reached the end of the road. From here on, only the little trail snaked up through the rocks of the mountainside. Above, clouds gathered, but she spotted a cluster of stars. This brought a smile to her face. Is that a sign? Perhaps Maribor appreciates the attempt, even if it is futile. Farewell, Annie whispered to the twinkling lights. Watch over my family. Look after the world. I won't see you again. She unwrapped the knife and held the dull steel high, catching the light of the moon. It felt good. It helped. It was something. Casting the rag away, she took a step, then paused and glanced back. Perhaps she should keep the cloth. She might need it to bind her wounds. How utterly absurd. I'll either emerge unscathed or die. No chance for a middle ground existed. Annie turned to face the mountain and climbed once more. The elders preached that the ritual had begun with the founding of the village, but no one knew how long ago that was. Gravestones near the commons dated back 1,000 years, but the dates on many of them couldn't be read. How old is this trail?
How long has it been feeding at our table?
The trail grew steeper and narrowed. Wind gusted now that the trees were gone, swirling the dust of worn rock around her. Here, only brittle bushes remained, struggling to hold onto the hillside, stunted by the constant blow of the harsh highland. She shimmied through crevices and shuffled along cliffs, while always holding tight to the knife.
I hope the elders won't punish my parents. It isn't their fault. It isn't mine either. If anyone is to blame, it's them. They're the ones who picked me.
She had never been this high up the mountain. Only the elders came this far. At least, they were the only ones who returned. The trail was well defined, gouged deep by dragged feet. She halted suddenly, her breath caught in her throat as she spied a torn bit of cloth on a thorn bush, fluttering in the wind. Her hands shook as she plucked it off the nettles. It was thin linen.
Has it been here for an entire year? Or could it be Lucy's from 3 years ago?
She clutched the knife tighter and took another step and then another. No one was dragging her.
I wouldn't go to my death locked in chains. I'll face the beast with open eyes and return its murderous glare.
For the first time in maybe 1,000 years, it'll know it faces a proud woman, not a helpless martyr. Climbing past the last ridge, she saw the cave, dark, sinister, and covered in hanging vines, an open maw that swallowed girls like her. A stone post stood 50 feet before it. The obelisk lurched at a slight angle, marred, chipped, blackened, and burned. The stone pillar rose amidst coils of rusted iron chains and shackles. The soil beneath it stretched out dark and spoiled, splattered black. Standing at the ledge and facing the cave's mouth, Annie felt the wind coursing down the mountain, howling its fury. It staggered her, but she composed herself and stood firm. With heart pounding, she gripped the knife so tightly her fingers lost feeling. Holding it with both hands as if it were a religious icon to ward off death, she took a single step forward. Beneath her, she felt and heard a snap. No need to look down to know what it was. No tree branches would be found at that height. After taking another breath, she took another step. From within the depths of darkness, Annie heard a rumble, a deep resonance that shook the ground and her resolve. Until that moment, she had hoped that what came toward her was just a tale, a made-up thing, a fiction used to frighten the young and timid.
I was wrong. It is real.
The shock froze her, and she stood as helpless as if she had let them chain her to the post. Only her dress moved, flapping in the wind. Seconds slipped by. She closed her eyes, and like a magician, Annie conjured the image of her little sister, Amy, in her mind. So small, so innocent, so sweet. She remembered her tear-feared eyes and her plea.
Let me go in her place. Take me. Take me.
Annie gritted her teeth. They would do that someday. Her sister, just like Lucy and so many others, would be dragged here. One day they would call Amy's name on the green and then chain her to the pillar. Before she knew it, Annie had taken another step, pushing her feet forward across the littered ground. Her feet continued past the chains and bones. She reached the pillar and stood where they wanted her, but she was hours early. Taking another step, Annie moved to where no girl had ever stood. After one more, she reached the spot where no man ever had either. Reaching the opening of the cave, she was no longer defying just her parents or the elders. She was defying time immemorial. Even the wind quieted. Silence fell. Nothing emerged. Maybe I had imagined the rumble. Or perhaps a rock just happened to fall at exactly that moment. It's more likely that it's asleep. Does it sleep? Another rumble, louder than before, and this time it was accompanied by a hot gust blown from the depths and stinking of sulfur. She waited at the mouth for it to come out, but nothing emerged. Fine, then I'll come to you. Dipping her head beneath the vines, she entered the darkness. Inside, she heard breathing. The rhythmic sound echoed off the walls. Her eyes adjusted and she could make out faint shapes, lumps and heaps, but none of those were it. They were only piles, skeletons of cows and deer. It lay deeper. She pressed onward. Finding a human skull on the ground, she faltered. Ahead, more bones lay shoved against the walls, like driftwood along a beach. Too many to count. Somewhere, water dripped and the very air quivered. Hot gusts continued to buffet her, but she wavered only briefly. She stepped around ancient bodies draped in tattered cloth. In the faint light, everything looked pale and lifeless. The air reeked with a thick stench of decay. Reaching the bowels of its lair, she entered a vast cavern where, at last, she beheld the beast. The monster filled the space with its bulk. A clawed foot lay no more than 10 feet away, yet its tail stretched too far into the darkness to see where it ended. The behemoth's chest expanded and fell, sucking in harsh breaths that vibrated stone. 2 great leathery wings stood at its sides, nearly reaching the ceiling, towering tents that stretched out on talon-endowed poles. Massive claws gripped the earth. A huge head lay between enormous forefeet, as innocent as a sleeping dog. Only it wasn't napping. 2 eyes glowed yellow in the dark, each one larger than a wagon wheel, watching her. "I am here," she pronounced, without knowing why she had said it. Her voice shook along with the rest of her.
"You are early," it replied.
That it spoke shocked Annie. Its voice, which she was certain had been a whisper, shook the chamber, terrifying her.
"Come back in the morning."
I will not. I am here to fight you, and will do so now."
The huge eyes blinked. She heard them as if they were window blinds.
"Are you a knight? A king? A god? I have erased cities and swallowed entire armies and fleets of ships. I have slain emperors, heroes who had forgotten they were mortal. They came at me with swords. They came at me with catapults. They came at me with fire. They conjured magic to slay me and begged their gods to help them prevail. I ate them all."
The smell of smoke entered her nostrils and made her nauseous. She stood firm, holding the knife in front of her, struggling to keep the blade still. She would not flee. She would not flinch. From somewhere deep inside, she heard her own thoughts. "I am not a victim.
I'm a hero. My grandmother said so.
For more than 10,000 years, I have lived on this mountain. I have allowed your people to exist here on the agreement that they should pay me one virgin maid each year as a tax. The payment is due at dawn.
I am the tax, she told it. But I will not be paid. I am here to collect.
And you think you can kill me?
I will try.
Why? Do you hate me so? I only ask for one life a year. It is a small price to pay.
This year, it is my life.
Ah, so you broke free. But why come here? You could run away, leave the village.
Others would die in my place. I can't let this continue. She set her jaw, narrowed her eyes, and took a step forward. The beast snarled. Her heart raced. She took another step. The beast groaned so loud it rattled the scattered bones. Finding it impossible to breathe, she summoned the courage to take another step. The creature struggled to raise its head and opened its mouth. As it did, she saw only 5 teeth, each worn to dull nubs. The monster exhaled a breath, conjuring nothing more than a belch of dark, brimstone-scented smoke. Then it coughed violently and dropped its head in exhaustion. Annie stared in disbelief. You're old, she stated as much to herself as to the creature. Too old to fight. Too old to defend yourself. Even against me. It said nothing for a moment, its eyes shut tight. Then slowly they opened once more, and it said in a strained voice,
It takes all my strength, once a year, to crawl out and eat the meal prepared for me. The one safely chained to the post.
But I don't understand. Why have the elders continued to sacrifice? You are no threat to anyone.
It's all they know. The ritual has continued for centuries. Humans are creatures of habit. They know that if they do as their fathers have done, all will be well. And they dare not alter the course so long established.
But all those girls, my friends, are you saying they died for nothing?
That depends on you, doesn't it?
The beast's oblong pupil narrowed to a thin line.
Kill me. Reveal the truth. And yes, they will have died for nothing. But if you feed me, then their memories will be preserved for all time as brave sacrifices for the good of your people.
If I don't kill you, more will die.
True, but only one per year. Disease takes more than that, does it not? Childbirth takes more than I do. How many of your neighbors die each year merely by accident, like choking on a bone or falling from a tree? And have you considered the harm you will do to your village by killing me?
Harm? Its huge lips stretched into a grim smile.
Think of the elders and the fate
that will befall them when the others find out? And what of the parents who will discover they willingly sent their innocent children to a horrible death? The guilt will be unbearable. Is it not better that they believe their loved ones saved everyone? How will they receive the news that it could have been avoided? The families of the dead will demand justice and compensation. The harmony of your town will end. Those men that sent me my food did so believing they were doing what was needed to save everyone. They are good men, and you would see them beaten and possibly killed? But to let you live would be worse. It would allow a lie to continue.
I am no lie.
It hissed so loudly it broke into a series of coughs.
I exist. And in my day, I could have crushed you and your world just as you swat flies. I deserve respect.
Not at the cost you charge. I can't sacrifice the future merely to hide the mistakes of the past.
No. It is because of me that you and yours have lived so well. No army has come to your door. No war. No band of killers. All because of me. They fear the dragon in the cave. They believe your village is under my protection. If an army arrived on your doorstep tomorrow, if it was to be war between your people and theirs, would you not offer up your life to spare all the bloodshed and misery? One life for many. Isn't that worth it? For the life of one child a year, I have saved you from that choice. I ask only for female virgins, those without companions or children. I do this to minimize the hardship.
It just seems so
practical, sensible. But there's more. So much more. So much has been built on expectations and belief. For thousands of years, generations upon generations, I have been as constant as the rising of the sun, as certain as death. Destroy me, and you will shake the foundation upon which you stand. Reveal me to be a myth, and all else will be questioned. Should we bother planting? Can the seasons be counted on? Is love real? Is life? Once foundations crumble, everything else falls down. Without me, there will be bloodshed, anarchy, and atrocities far beyond the death of a single girl. You will return to a world of hate, fear, and jealousy. Destroy me, and you will destroy innocence, faith, and serenity. Paradise lost for the want of so small a price.
You paint a picture that's so hopeless. It doesn't have to be so bleak. You don't know. None of that may come to pass.
Your childish mind is too immature to comprehend. You have only lived a few years. I have lived millenniums. I know the way of humans and the evils they succumb to. I know the pattern of your kind and the methods of their desires.
You see, it whispered comfortingly,
Your people need me. I ask for only one meal a year, and on that, I can subsist for centuries to come. I can no longer fly, and I can no longer breathe fire, but I can still ravage your village. Slay me, and your town will burn just as surely as from dragon's breath. Neighbor will turn on neighbor, and all those future sacrifices you wish to avoid will never be born to appreciate your heroics. Or is it cowardice? The big wagon wheel eyes glared at her accusingly. I think you seek my death out of fear for your own life. Would you doom your people so that you may live a few more short years? Is that bravery? Your forebears understood sacrifice, but you are spoiled, selfish, and care only for yourself. The others went willingly because they were concerned about the greater good. Others in your village would comply. They would sacrifice themselves. You could still leave. There must be someone who would gladly take your place. She stared into its eyes until she could not look at them any longer. Her sight fell on the blade of the knife. It blurred before her tears. Her lips trembled. I am right, aren't I? The beast asked. Yes, she said, nodding. You're right. There is someone who would sacrifice herself. The dragon smiled again. Annie's fingers tightened. She no longer quivered. She was no longer afraid. Taking a step forward, she thrust the knife under the scale at the beast's throat and plunged it deep. Dark blood poured from the wound, spilling over her hands and down her arms. The beast groaned and shook. She drew it out and thrust it in again, driving deeper. More blood, hot and slick, sprayed across her face and chest. A river ran across her chest. The pure white gown, forever stained, forever ruined. The beast shook, struggled, then collapsed. She dropped the knife and backed away, watching the beast until the smoke stopped issuing from its nostrils. Its eyes still glared at her in disbelief, its light gone. Annie turned her back on it, and when she left the cave, a new dawn was rising. I hope you enjoyed listening to Traditions by Michael J. Sullivan, narrated by Corinne Norton. I absolutely loved the conversation between the dragon and the girl, and in the afterword for this piece, Michael talks a little bit more about that. He says, "What I like most about this piece is the convincing argument the beast makes to save his own life. I can't help but think he should have stopped while he was ahead. Ultimately, this story shows my distaste for the status quo and how change is ultimately a good thing, and the future is brightest when we dare to not follow what has come before. It has worked well in my career, and more importantly, the woman who I married, who should have been far beyond my reach. And yet I was daring enough to shoot for the stars and ask for her hand in marriage. It's now been 45 years, and I'm hoping for many, many more." Aren't afterwords great? I love getting that inside information on both the story and on the author. If you want to read more by Michael, go to www.ryira.com or michael-j-sullivan.com to find more of his books. In addition to his ongoing Ryira Chronicles, he is currently working on a new 5-book series tentatively titled The Cycle.
I keep forgetting to tell all of you about my other podcast, which is a serialized audiobook for Blood of the Stars. After getting so much positive feedback about the podcast, Peter and I took the plunge to narrate the audiobooks for my debut series, The Half-Light Chronicles. And over the course of several months, I'm releasing the first book in the series, Blood of the Stars, as a serialized audiobook podcast to help as many people find the series as possible. So if you enjoy listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, I think there's a good chance you'll enjoy listening to the audiobook as well. You can find it on all the same podcasting platforms under Blood of the Stars, or you can listen on my website at corinnenorton.com/audio. I'll also have easy links in the show notes. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.